Welcome to Nutrition Genius Radio. I'm your host, Laura, the Sassy Dietitian, along with my good nutrition genius friend, Marie, aka Pearl. And we're here to explain why coconut oil is better, bacon is the king of the world, and butter and garlic will bring about world peace. Disclaimer, the views on this podcast are not meant to be substituted for medical advice, but are for general information only. Let's dive in.
Hey girl, hey.
What's shaking, bacon?
Again, living the dream with the sunshine in Rochester, New York. I don't ever know how to answer that question.
I mean, you know, I don't really know either. I just love it because I love bacon, so I just keep saying it. What's going on in Pearltopia? Maybe you can answer that question.
I just got back from Philadelphia. I went to go visit. That was weird. Visit one of my college friends, Ashley.
And support the Eagles. What?
What? Oh hell no.
Yeah, but you were in Eagle country, girl.
Oh, you are out of your damn mind if you think I'd be supporting the Eagles. I'm a Giants fan.
I'm an Eagles fan.
I bleed blue.
I bleed green.
Okay, the fact that you don't even know what color.
No, I do. I do, but the thought of bleeding green is just disgusting in my mind. So, but anyway, okay. How was the lovely land of the Birdland?
It was good, but so I got a restaurant story to kind of comparable to yours.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, so we went to this place called I think Kalahula or something like that.
Sounds Hawaiian.
No, it was like Louisiana in.
What's the Cajun.
New Orleans in Cajun, yeah, whatever.
I'm not sure. So, I just sounded right.
Something like that.
We're so cultured. So
we went there for brunch, and there was five of us plus two dogs. We were sitting outside.
Nice.
And five plus two. And we got there, and so on there's like the sign out here that's like, during the week we open at these hours. On Sundays we open at 11, unless our chefs are ridiculously hungover, in which case it might be a little bit later. So
it's like, God.
Plaque outside of their restaurant that's like, hey, so we plan on opening at 11, but there's a good chance that won't happen. And we got there at like 10:50, and one of the people that's with us is a chef, and he had to go to work. So we were like, should we go? Yeah, I mean, it was only 10 minutes, so we're like, let's just wait. And someone was getting into the door at that point, so we're like, oh, it's fine. So we waited, and then they came over and took our drink order. And again, it took, like you were saying before, forever for them to get our drinks out to us. And then we wanted Jarrett to be able – shout out Jarrett. He's probably – both of them, Ashley and Jarrett, both listen.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening.
So we wanted him to be able to get his food and go quick enough so that he could get to work on time. And so they brought it out super quick and like right away. So it was really nice there. But then the rest of our, so then they brought out Ashley. Jarrett left, and then they brought out Ashley's food and no one else's. So the rest of us were like, okay, this is weird. Like, what's going on?
Oh, dear God.
And Ashley was just... I'm going to call her out. She just wasn't feeling very well at this point. And so she was like, I can't eat this and I need to leave right now. So
oh my God.
She ended up leaving. And the rest of us are still sitting there waiting for our food. Oh my God, there was not five of us. There were six of us. So four of us left. And we're sitting there waiting for the rest of our food to come out, and it's not coming, right? We probably waited for another like half hour to 45 minutes for the rest of our food to come out.
Oh my gosh.
Then it came out, and one person's bacon was totally burnt. And so she ordered pancakes with, like, it was pancakes with a side of fruit and then a side of bacon. And her pancakes came out, and the pancakes were fine. But then they were like, yeah, we don't have any fruit. So she was like, oh, okay. And then the bacon was burnt. And so she was like, could you just, like, take the bacon off the bill and then just not charge me the full amount for the pancakes? Like, if you don't have half of my meal here, I don't want to pay for it, you know? Pancakes cost, like, 25 cents to make, so...
Not even.
Yeah, right?
I'm sure they're using, like, Bisquick.
Right. So she was like, yeah, I can't split it. I don't... And so then she's like, I'll see what I can do. So then she leaves and comes back and is like, I took 10% off. So like $1 off of her meal that she didn't get half of.
Oh my gosh.
It was ridiculous. It was so bad. And the thing, I think the thing that bothered me the most is there was like no, there was no apology for it. You know, there's plenty of times where like screw ups happen in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Like, totally, you know, it's totally understandable, but there was just no like, it wasn't like the manager in your story that came over and was like, oh my God, we'll take care of everything. You're not paying for anything.
Right.
It was just like they brought our meal out in pieces, which the Jarrett thing we asked for, but then the Ashley thing, it was just so weird when it came to the table. Yeah. We were like, what's going on right now?
It's the lack of customer service I found.
Yeah.
Like,
I
just feel like there's a lot more, like, I don't know if it's that they don't care or if they were just never taught the proper customer service. Like, I don't know. I find myself getting more and more annoyed at restaurants. I'm like, why do I bother? It's too expensive, and I enjoy my food way better, so.
Right. I genuinely enjoy cooking, so.
Me too. But it's hard, right, when you're at someone else's place. You're, like, at the liberty of kind of either if they have a kitchen or if everyone wants to go out.
Right. We actually did cook quite a bit when we were down there. We made, well, and by we, I mean Jarrett, made us all brunch one day.
That's awesome.
I love being anywhere Jarrett is because he's such a good cook.
That is amazing. It's good to have good cook friends, chef friends.
So he made us breakfast one day, and then we made dinner that night. We made a big dinner. It was really good. But there's they live right next to this market, like this outdoor market. So on Saturday, we went there and bought all of the produce and stuff that we were using and then made it. Yeah, it was delish.
Oh, there's, what is it, Reading Market? Reading Terminal Market? Downtown Philly.
It was just this like small.
I don't think it was that, but the Reading Terminal Market. I'm probably saying it wrong, but it's in downtown Philly, and it's like an indoor one, and it's like food heaven.
Nice.
Yeah, go Philly.
So, what's going on in Sassyland over there?
Well, we just got back from the Jersey Shore, and no, I'm not talking Seaside Heights and the TV show. I've literally never been to Long Beach Island or the Jersey Shore. So, well, that's not true. I think I was like maybe an infant when we were there, so I don't remember it. But it was way different than I thought it was going to be. I was like expecting like Guido's coming out the wazoo. No offense to Guido's. I mean, I've only seen the Jersey Shore on TV, and I'm like, oh, okay, so I'm not going to fit in. No, not the case. So we had a nice relaxing weekend. I have a sweet raccoon tan. So if you see me, that's what's going on. I don't have some weird face condition. You can make fun of me. I'm allowing it. We just kind of had a low key. I mean, we were staying at a hotel, so we didn't have a kitchen, which kind of stinks. Once you're used to eating the way we eat pretty clean, it's hard to find things. You know, everyone went to Wawa for lunch every day, and I was like, it's okay. I'm going to eat my food I brought from home because there is nothing in Wawa. I can guarantee you that if you're eating clean. So we had a good relaxing time. I can't really think of anything crazy. We met up with some of JJ's family friends, and they cooked dinner one night, and it was so funny because we didn't know what they were cooking, but they're like, just come over for dinner. And so, of course, we're like, yeah, sure. And then halfway through, I'm like, we probably should have asked them what they were cooking. It turns out they were making, like, penny vodka.
Oh,
and
no.
I walk into the kitchen, and, like, of course, there's, like, literally a giant pot of just penne pasta. And I was like, well, I can't have that. I hope they just, like, leave it separate. And then all of a sudden, I see one of the girls. She's pouring in an entire container of heavy cream. Now,
poor JJ.
Right, literally. Like,
new food.
And I had walked up. And because I told JJ, I'm like, I think they're making penne vodka, but I'm like, I think that they just made the sausage on the side. I'm like, so not to worry. So we get up there and I just see the girl, like she's pouring in half and then she puts it down. She goes, nope, I'm going to put the whole thing in. And I'm like, no, but like, I don't know the people who are cooking for us. I wasn't about to be like, oh, by the way, we can't have any of that. So, of course, like we sit down to dinner and JJ and I kind of like tried to sit on the side so no one would notice us because I told him, I'm like, you're not eating that. We're not going to make it home. And I'm like, I'm not eating it because we won't make it home. I'm like, we're going to be staying here and we're both going to be sick. So we Luckily, they were so sweet. Like, they were like, what else can we get for you? And I'm like, no, nothing. Like, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. And so one of the guys cut me up an heirloom tomato, like, from his garden and, like, some salt on it. And I was in heaven. And then one of the moms just, like, made us burgers, like, out of the blue. She's like, here, by the way, here's some burgers. And I was like, you guys are the sweetest. Like, they didn't need to do that. Like, I totally was okay not eating. I was like, you know, I'd rather not eat and get sick, you know? So right. It was so sweet. I was like, how awesome was that? So we actually ended up eating like really well in that disastrous situation that could have been.
Good.
But yeah, now we're back to reality in upstate New York, I guess, living the dream.
Living the dream?
I guess, you know, it's fine. Anyway, now that we've, you know, talked everyone's ear off about our lives, should we get to the topic of the day?
Of course.
So today, what are we talking about, Marie?
Dairy. To eat or not to eat?
That is the question.
What's the answer?
Well, it depends.
We love that word.
We do. That word. Those words. Well, why don't I go first?
I would love you to.
Okay. And I'll talk about why I think we shouldn't eat it or drink it or consume it or whatever word you want to use. Imbibe it. Is that a thing?
And what the what the dang hell did you just say?
Just like this morning before we started recording, I used the word bandwidth, and I'm not really sure what that word means, but it sounded computer and techie. So anyway, I think imbibe means to drink. Yes.
Let me give it a Google.
We're nutrition geniuses, not word geniuses. Anyway, okay, while you give it a Google.
Not a thesaurus. Imbide.
No, B-I-B-E.
Bye.
Like Bieber.
Oh. Like Justin? Any relation?
Wait, I thought you guys were married.
Ew.
All right, while
I always say he's my cousin.
Yeah.
Imbibe. It means to drink alcohol.
Oh, dang. Okay, not imbibe, people. There's
Hold on. There's two meanings. It means drink alcohol or absorb or assimilate, as in ideas or knowledge. And then...
So our listeners will be imbibing today in about dairy.
Oh, yeah. Well played. Well played, ma'am.
So we are learning. We are learning words on this show. You didn't think you were going to get that, did you? Bonus. Anyway, all right.
You might not learn anything about nutrition today, but you're going to learn vocab.
You're going to learn vocab and learn about our ridiculous lives. Okay, so why shouldn't we drink it or eat it or what? However you consume your dairy. So one thing I like to point out, and this is just kind of a thought-provoking thought, if that makes any sense. So we are one of the only species that drinks another species' milk. So you don't see cows drinking human milk, or at least I hope you don't, because that would just be weird. You don't see, like, monkeys drinking cow milk. You don't really see other species drinking another species' milk. If you do, then that's probably something newer that's going on. Okay, Marie, yes. What? Are there other species drinking other species' milk?
I have a counter to this argument because this is one of the arguments that drives me nuts. Laura and I, by the way, are going to play devil's advocate all podcasts.
Oh, absolutely.
Laura's going to be anti-dairy and I'm going to be pro-dairy, just so that we can give you guys both the different sides of the argument. So to go along with what you're saying about how we're the only species that drinks another species' milk, well, guess what? We're also the only species that builds buildings and lives in houses, and we're the only species that does all of these crazy things, like has computers and does podcasts.
True.
So there's a lot of things
Well played. I agree. I just think it's something, it's kind of one of those like thinking points, like, you know, if you are trying to figure out if you should or shouldn't drink dairy, I just think it's a good point. Like, you know, maybe if you should or shouldn't listen to a podcast, which you totally should.
That's how we climbed to the top of the food chain, was being smarter than everyone else.
This is true. We also have opposable thumbs. So two thumbs up for us. next thing is that I feel, and I think there's a lot of people out there that would also argue, that most milk and dairy products are not as nutrient dense as other foods such as meat, fruits, vegetables. What that means is that per bite or per drink, you are not getting as much nutrients such as vitamins and minerals
as you are from meat. So in meat, most good quality grass-fed, like we've talked about meat, you're getting a ton of fat-soluble vitamins. You're getting omega-3s if they're coming from healthy fat in the form of CLA. We could talk about that another day. I'm rhyming. And so it's, and same with fruits and vegetables. Per bite, you're getting more vitamins and minerals. So I think that's a good argument as well. Another argument is that milk is actually, it has compounds, so they're called protease inhibitors, that make them hard to digest, especially for people who don't have good gut integrity. So if you're someone who struggles with a lot of chronic GI diseases, such as Crohn's and celiac disease and ulcerative colitis and all those fun stuff, you may have a harder time digesting this protein because it's a lot bigger than what we find in human milk. This also brings us to the point that if you are someone who has celiac disease, you obviously have a intolerance to gluten, which is a protein. And unfortunately, the proteins found in dairy end up being cross-reactors to gluten. So what that means is that your body can't really tell the difference between gluten and then the proteins in milk, especially if you are in the kind of healing stages of celiac disease. Your gut is kind of very destroyed, and so your body is just kind of, you're not helping it by adding this dairy in. And those are just kind of skimming the surface, but any counterpoints to anything I've said here, Marie?
It's delicious.
Well, here, there comes the taste point.
Step number one. Okay, so I kind of, in a little way, disagree with the fact that it's not as nutrient dense, because I think as long as you are consuming, you're consuming whole milk, and in whole milk, I know you guys are freaking out, but remember back to our Friends of Fat podcast, where like, what's the point of eliminating fat when you really need it? So again, we're going to get into it a little bit later about specifically what types of milk that if you are going to consume dairy, you should consume. But milk has carbohydrates, it has fats, and it has protein. It has all of our macronutrients. It's a source of hydration because it's a non-caffeinated liquid. It doesn't have any fiber in it, but it does have some sodium, some cholesterol, some potassium, some phosphorus, vitamins A, calcium, B12, vitamin C, vitamin B6, magnesium. And so I do think that it is a decent source of nutrition. No, certainly if you paired kale up against the micronutrient ranges, of course kale would win out. But I do think that it does provide us with some good nutrients as far as a drink goes. And a lot of times people get very bored just drinking water. So I think that milk is a nice little addition.
And I think this, we'll get into this a little later, but I think you bring up a good point. Most of the milk that our country is drinking does not have everything you said as far as nutrients go, because what are they drinking? They're drinking skim milk that comes from grain-fed cows. So that, you know, I guess it depends also, you know, if you're getting the top quality milk out there from the top quality cows versus the top quality meat from top quality cows, then I think it's a little bit different of a discussion, because you're going to be getting more nutrients from both than you would from grain-fed cows and their meat versus their milk. So I think that's, yeah, that's a great argument. It just, it kind of depends. It all goes to quality, right? I mean,
right. Absolutely.
So,
so another couple of reasons in the, like, against dairy argument. I know a lot of people are very concerned about the hormones that are in cow's milk. And I will at least be able to put this to a little bit of rest. So basically what happened before is, cows naturally produce a hormone that's called bovine somatotropin, also known as bovine growth hormone. And a certain company decided that they were going to make this synthetic hormone in a lab. So that's called RBST or RBGH, which you would see on your like milk labels.
And
what this hormone did was it increased milk production in cows by 10 to 15%, which is beneficial, obviously, in that they're going to be producing more milk, but it's not beneficial because it was causing a lot of infections in the udders of cows, and then, of course, that would lead to a need for antibiotics. And so on top of that, our consumers got really concerned that, like, oh my gosh, there's growth hormones in milk, and then that's going to get into our bodies, and what's it going to do inside our bodies, which is an absolutely legitimate concern. And so because of this, the huge freak out in consumers, many, actually the majority of dairy farmers have stopped using it. And so actually the way that a lot of dairy works is that, it'll come from one farm and then that'll go and get pumped to like a storage, not, I don't really necessarily want to call it a storage facility, but the facility where it's like homogenized and pasteurized. And it all kind of goes together in one. So it's not, it's coming from multiple cows. Because of this, any cow that's in that like conglomerate of where this milk is going has to be free of this hormone. So, it's a hormone that's not really used in milk anymore. So no need to worry about that. And if you're especially concerned, just read your labels and almost all of them will say RBST free.
Well, once again, that brings up the point. Like we'll probably ingrain this in you for through this podcast. This is the quality that really matters when it comes to dairy. And if you're getting from a great farmer who's treating his animals right, you're not going to find that crap in there.
No.
For lack of a better word.
Right. So then the next step would be antibiotics, which I don't even think we need to go into the, at this point, the dangers of having too many antibiotics pumping through your system and then what that's going to do, causing super bugs and whatnot. Also killing your own beneficial gut bacteria. And you know how much I love gut bacteria, guys. Don't mess with it.
Oh, no. Don't cry. It's going to be okay.
I know. So use of antibiotics is pretty, I think in general it's thought to be pretty high on farms. But in dairy farms, it's not, because any cow that may or may not need antibiotics has to be removed from the milking for, I don't remember what it is, but it's a certain amount of days after they complete their cycle of antibiotics to make sure that it's completely out of their system and out of their milk. So I learned all of this because I went to a dairy farm when I lived in West Virginia, and the farmer there used a lot of organic processes, and he didn't want to take the step to become an organic dairy farmer because his argument was that if on an organic farm a cow has to be given antibiotics, so they could have like stepped in something bad and like got an infection in their hoof and needed antibiotics. And so in an organic farm, if that happens and if a cow does need to get antibiotics, they have to be removed from the farm completely. Like they can't even stay there anymore. It's just, it's if they get antibiotics once, it's done and over with and that's it. So any organic milk that you'll be receiving doesn't have any of these antibiotics in, and then any non-organic operation, the cow has to be removed from the milking process for a certain amount of time to make sure all of the residues are out of their body. And not only that, but all of the milk is tested for antibiotic residues. And when the farmer in West Virginia explained it to us, he was saying that the level that it has to be below is equivalent to a can of beer in Lake Michigan. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
But still, I think that it just depends what you're trying to get from milk and mm-hmm. knowing your farmer, because like a celiac can't have a drop of gluten, you know? And so it's like, can a celiac have a drop of beer in Lake Michigan? No, probably not. But if someone can tolerate milk and you have good gut integrity, is that really a problem? No. And I think that brings up another good point about knowing your farmer, because not only is that a great point that, you know, he'd have to get rid of the animal that really just needs one dose of antibiotics and he'll be a healthy cow again, but the process of becoming an organic farm, you have to jump through leaps and bounds, and the cost to these farmers is sometimes not worth it to them. So it's not that they're not practicing organic practices and they're not, you know, whether it's fruit and vegetables or whether it's their meat, but they may actually be having an organic farm, but they just, eat, A, they don't want to do that to their animals, like Marie was saying, or B, they don't want to have to pay the huge sum of money to the government because they don't have it. They're not, you know, don't have enough demand and supply, whatever.
Right.
So yeah, that's a great point. But,
sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I just want to point out what I was trying to explain before about like the celiac disease and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Dairy is very highly allergenic. So it's one of the biggest allergens in our society. So, you know, we have, what are the other ones? You have wheat, dairy, eggs, fish, like shellfish.
It's wheat, soy, dairy, eggs, fish, shellfish, peanuts, and tree nuts.
Oh, you would. You're such a genius. But just, so the ones who can't tolerate it, chances are you may never be able to tolerate it, no matter how well you clean up your diet. So it is an allergen. So it just depends who you are.
And also the, not just on an allergen, but on an intolerance standpoint, right. Something like, I believe in the entire world, 80% of people are lactose intolerant. Lactose is the sugar that is in milk. And I think it's what Eastern European and people of Eastern European descent are most likely to not have lactose intolerance.
Yeah, I think 25% of Caucasians are mm-hmm. lactose intolerant, which is very few. So actually, most people in the U.S. who come from a Caucasian background and European background have a better chance of being tolerant to lactose. Whereas right, I think the Asian cultures are...
Yeah,
like 75% or more intolerant.
But if you're outside that group of people, then it could potentially be very uncomfortable for you to consume dairy, and in which case you yes. should avoid it, because not only is it just like an uncomfortable feeling, but it's also causing damage to your intestinal lining too. So don't right. mess with that.
And I know some people out there use Lactaid, which is basically you're now taking the enzyme pill form to help break down that lactose. And I know JJ does it because he is so lactose intolerant. He'll take it whenever we go out, because even when restaurants say that they're not using butter, they're using butter. And mm-hmm. which, I mean, to you and me, we're like, yeah, it tastes delicious. To him, it's, you know, a nightmare, because he really is so lactose intolerant. And I think in those situations that Lactaid can be helpful, so it doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, cause a disaster and we can't leave the restaurant. But, I just don't think relying on that for your entire life is a good idea, because, you know, God knows what that pill's doing to your gut either.
I was just also going to say, where's it coming from?
Right. I agree. And I just don't like pills and drugs. Like, if you're relying on them, I actually saw, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's like a, I don't know if it's even useful. It's basically Lactaid, but it's gluten. Like, it's for gluten intolerant people. And it just is like,
I heard that they were coming out with something like that, and I was so confused, because I was like, this, it doesn't even make sense.
No. You know what I can't stand is, I remember someone at Albany Med telling me, they were like, guess what, there's almost a cure for celiac disease. Oh, and I looked God. At them and I'm like, yeah, there is a cure, avoid gluten. Like right. it just like blew my mind that we are in a society where the cure is a pill. The cure is not like, try and fix it with your diet. Just like, was it Aristotle that said, like, no, Hippocrates. Oh my God. I don't know my philosopher, my Greek philosophers, but he said like, food is thy medicine or whatever. And it's like, they knew back then, like, and I'm not saying that drugs don't come in handy. I mean, that's why we have been able to outlive our ancestors, but mm-hmm. Turning to pills for little things like this all the time is not good for our gut, not good for our health.
No.
So, you know, that's kind of, if you find that any time you drink milk, you're having some sort of reaction, whether it's gut related, whether it's sleeping issues, whether it's skin issues, you know, you need to take it out. Mm-hmm. If you find no problem and you're eating good quality dairy, then hey, more power to you.
Yeah.
You're more evolved.
So what is good quality dairy?
So good quality dairy is going to come, it's going to start with the cow, right? Because dairy mm-hmm. comes from a cow.
Stop it. Actually, it could also come from a goat.
It could. Or... It could, right. It could, if you're getting goat's milk or lamb milk. But most people are consuming cow dairy, which comes from a cow. So starting with the animal, figuring out if the animal is healthy. If the animal is healthy, how do you know that? So a cow is a ruminant. It feeds on grass. So it should be a grass-fed cow. Hence, they'll call it grass-fed dairy or dairy, which doesn't really make sense because I mean, the dairy itself is not being fed grass, but it comes from a grass-fed cow. So you want to make sure that that's where your milk is coming from, because chances are that's going to be a much healthier animal. It's going to have those fat-soluble vitamins that Marie was talking about. And I think I've only ever seen grass-fed milk or milk product, dairy products, in the whole milk form. I don't know if you've seen different.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
So chances are if you're getting that grass-fed, that good quality, you're not even not going to have to worry about, well, I'm sure at some point we'll come to that, but you normally don't have to worry if it's indeed full fat or not. And where else was I going? Most goat dairy that I've seen is full fat as well, but it's a much smaller market that I've noticed, and same with sheep milk. I've seen very little of that. I think I just saw some sheep yogurt the other day, and it said black sheep, so I took a picture of it and sent it to Dean, because I was like, look, it's a black sheep in the yogurt aisle. But other ways to spot good fat, good dairy?
No, not that I am thinking of off the top of my head. I personally am not a fan of like us going to the store and buying dairy, because if you think about it, so it came out of the cow, and then it went to a processing facility, and then it got sent out. And so going through the steps of like what happens, first of all, it's a time thing. Like, how long does it take to get from the cow to your shelf? Actually, to be honest with you, it's a pretty short period of time because it is a perishable product that they try and get it out really quickly. But at the processing plant, what happens there? Because the reason that that's an issue is because, as you guys know, from the time that something is picked, like a fruit or a vegetable, it loses its nutrients on the way to the store and then on the way to you. Same thing with dairy. So at the processing plant, though, the milk goes through two different processes. The first one's homogenization, the second one's pasteurization. So what homogenization is it's a process to make the milk a uniform product. So fat tends to clump together, and, you know, if anyone has ever, like, seen milk, like back in the day, like the cream would always rise to the top, right?
Like, and then cream on the top yogurt.
Right, and then they would take it off, use it to churn butter. Oh, I do love cream on the top yogurt. From the you're talking about from the Honest Wheat Co-op.
Shout out to the Honest Wheat Co-op in Albany, New York. They have some great yogurts there if you're in the area.
They really do.
You're not going to find, well, you might find some bad yogurts. You'll find the vegan ones. But yeah, there's some great yogurts there.
Absolutely. So this homogenization process, it's used to kind of push all of the milk through these teeny tiny holes to make it all a uniform product. So that is kind of an issue because it changes like the composition of the phospholipids and the fats that are in milk. So when it goes through this, originally it's our calcium in milk, for example, is in the form of calcium phosphate, which is really easily absorbed for us. And it has a phospholipid membrane on the outside of it. And then that is what our cells look like, with a phospholipid membrane on the outside. So it's really easily assimilated into our body. But when this happens, the fat, like, surrounding the calcium goes, like, it's pulled off of this product. And so now we have this free-floating calcium, which reacts in this process called saponification. And then the end result of it is a type of calcium that's really irritating to our intestines. And then it's also harder for us to absorb. So that means that the calcium is not the milk is not as good of a calcium source as you would think, because now it's in a form that isn't in its natural form. So and then the pasteurization process is to kill all of the bacteria that's in milk. And unfortunately, it kills bacteria, which, if you think about it, like, okay, in yogurt, there's bacteria in it, and that's good bacteria for us. And then in, you know, we're always telling everyone, eat probiotics. So why is this such a bad thing? Well, you know, farms can be dirty places. And so there was, like, I think 10. It was a very small number of people had gotten E. coli from milk. And so because of that, they invented this pasteurization process to make sure that no one ever got sick from it. And in theory, it sounds like a great idea, but it kills not only the beneficial bacteria that are in milk for us, but it also kills the enzymes that are in milk. And these enzymes help our bodies to digest milk and make it a product that's easy for us to assimilate all the nutrients for. So pasteurization kills that. So that's one of the big reasons why I'm not crazy about us buying milk in a store, because if you do that, your milk just isn't the same. Like, it really is a processed food at that point.
Right. I think a good point, too, is the type of pasteurization. So if you're not someone who's going to go for raw milk or, you know, go to your local farmer and get that, you can look for you don't want to see ultra-pasteurization, because that means that it was pasteurized at a very high heat, which kills all the bacteria Marie's talking about. So you want to look for something that's a little less I got to look. Do you remember what it's called if it's like a little lower heat of pasteurization?
No.
Well, this goes back to my food science days. It's really pulling on it.
I have only seen things as just pasteurized or ultra-pasteurized.
I think it depends. It really just depends. There's all, like, different names for it. I can look it up and put it in the show notes.
All of your organic milks are going to have used that ultra-pasteurization process, because there's less organic dairy farms out there, and so the product has to travel for a longer way. So they use the ultra-high-temperature pasteurization in order to make the milk more shelf-stable for a longer period of time.
Right. And that's why getting it local can be super helpful, because you're getting it almost immediately.
Right. So.
Do you know, can we do a team timeout real quick?
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with milk.
Shocker.
Shocker. It brought me back to my food science class, which was really cool. And I give food scientists like mad props, because I thought it was one of my harder classes.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, you were talking about how milk goes through all these steps just to get from farm through the processing plant to the store. I remember them showing an apple. And the apple, I mean, you think of it, right? It should come off the tree into your hand. Well, no, it went through 20 steps. Now, it's not going through steps such as milk, but, like, I don't know that that's the exact number, but it went through an enormous amount of steps for what it was. And so that's another reason, like, if you know a farm in the area, which if you're in the Albany area, Indian Ladder Farm is a great one, or Bowman Orchards, I think, you can pick the apple off the tree. That's mm-hmm. one step.
There's tons out in that area.
There's so many, especially, I mean, New York alone, there's mm-hmm. tons. So for something like that, go pick your own apple, because 20 steps for an apple, that's just...
It's crazy.
That, like, blew my mind. I sat there, and I can picture the, like, the setup of the factory, and it showed, like, all the different steps, like, number one, number two, number three. And I'm like, this is an apple. Like, this is stupid. Yeah. But that's how a lot of our processing plants have become, because there's so much regulation from the government that they almost have to do that to be able to give it to you and, you know... Not risk
well, not only that, but, like, because they're sitting around for so long, like, half the time apples can I know that they have these things now where they, like, I don't know if it's that they decrease the oxygen that's in there, or they do something, and they leave apples in there for, like, a year or two before it goes to your shelf. It's disgusting.
Right. That's why I look back at our show notes for last week, and I think we put something in there on fruits and vegetables in season. And that's why you want to be eating in season, because exactly what Marie said, some of these fruits that are able to, that they found a way, if you're eating them out of season, like, first off, they don't taste good, and we love taste. And second of all, God knows when they were picked, and there's no nutrients in them anymore. They're just kind of a foreign food at that point that, ugh. That was real scientific of me. Yeah.
It was, yeah.
The thought of, like, a gritty apple right now, I'm just like, ugh. I hate gritty apples.
Agreed.
Taste all right. Rules.
So if you're going to eat milk, I guess the point that we're getting at is if we're going to eat milk, if you're going to eat milk, drink milk, or have dairy products, we want them to be local. We want them to be organic. Basically, we want you, again, we're going to say this over and over again, but develop a relationship with your farmer. And I'm going to say it, go get some raw milk. It's delicious. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, and it's not scary at all, and it's you know, it's not dangerous. It's not a product, as long as you make a really have a relationship with these farmers. I'm going to put a caveat to that. It's not dangerous. I would for just for better safe than sorry purposes, anyone who's immunocompromised, I don't think should be consuming raw dairy. But again, as long as you
that
have
includes pregnant people.
Yes. As long as you
women
pregnant people.
Hey, wasn't there pregnant dad or whatever, or dad mom or whatever it was?
No, it was a movie.
Oh.
It wasn't real.
Do you expect me to remember these things?
So I don't know. I lost my train.
Sorry. Sorry. So, yeah, if you're immunocompromised,
you have a relationship with your farmer.
Yeah. Know your farmer. Know, exactly. Know your farmer, because the farmer's going to be able to tell you the health of the cows. And if you know the health of the cows or whatever animal you're getting the dairy from, chances are that it's going to be a better product. Also, you can go on farm tours, just like Marie did. Mm-hmm. You can call your farmer up and make it a family affair. I mean, kids love that stuff. You know, yeah. They get to see the animal. Like, and then you can kind of look at it a bigger picture. Okay, so they're not organic, but you go out and the cows are in the fields, you know, they're pasture raised, they're out there enjoying life, they look happy. I mean, you can tell if an animal looks happy.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to be like super sluggish and really fat. They're probably going to be a little leaner.
Or agitated either.
Right. They're going to be living in their environment and they're going to be happy. You know, a happy pig is going to be rolling around in the mud.
Right.
I mean, you're not drinking pig's milk. Is that even a thing?
I don't know, but that's weird.
I just threw the pigs in there because you know how I love pigs.
Yes. Little pastured piggies.
Another thing is that we talked about dairy, but then the same goes for dairy products, including butter and I was just going to say dairy again. Cheese.
Mm-hmm. And yogurt.
And yogurt. Yep, yogurt too. And are there any other dairy products out there? Oh, ice. I mean,
cheese.
If you're going to eat cottage cheese, ice cream, that kind of thing. If you're going to eat ice cream, that should be a treat. There's a lot of sugar in ice cream. And once again, you want the full fat, because if they take out the fat, chances are they're adding in the sugar, and all the nutrients is mostly in the fat, and sugar is just going to wreck your life. Hide your kids, hide your wife.
Dairy coming to wreck your life. We could be rappers.
We could be. We should be.
Okay.
No,
so
we shouldn't be.
Now they know what kind of dairy to eat. What if you think that you might be a little intolerant, or you just want to give an elimination diet a try? How do you go about doing that?
So if dairy is the only thing that you think you're having problems with, then I normally recommend a 30-day elimination. Reason being, it just really gives people that, okay, I can do this for a month idea. Certainly if you can do it for 6 to 8 weeks, it's probably even better, because you're getting your body completely recharged and away from that dairy. So I would shoot for 30 days. And then after the 30 days is when you want to add it back. It's good to do a single food elimination, because then you know when you add it back, you know if that's the true cause of your symptoms. Obviously, some people do more than one food elimination at a time, but if you truly think that you're having some kind of issue with dairy, which can be anything, it's not just GI symptoms like diarrhea and constipation. It can be foggy brain, it can be insomnia, it can be acne, it can be however it manifests in your body, and that goes with any irritant and any food that you're not tolerating. So don't think it's just diarrhea or constipation, because I think that's what a lot of people tend to think. It certainly can be, but that's not the only thing that it could cause. And when you add it back, you want to, you know, add it back day 31 and really, you know, make notes. And when you add it back, you want to add back that quality stuff we're talking about, not the skim milk that you find in your local grocery store.
Well, speaking of skim milk, Laura, what does nobody have time for?
Dun, 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 dun. I just like doing that. ain't
sorry.
Nobody got time for skim milk and soy and rice milk. So skim milk just drives me crazy. First off, if you're a taste enthusiast like we are, what does skim taste like, Marie?
Water.
And does it taste like good
water?
Boogers.
No, it tastes like booger water.
This murky booger water is what you will get.
And it's blue.
Yes,
it's
blue.
It's not white.
It's blue because why? There's no fat in it. You can almost see through it. So skim milk, first off, it doesn't taste good. So that should be like clue one that you shouldn't eat it. Clue two that you shouldn't eat it is that, like Marie was talking about with the processing of milk. So if you're thinking of a whole milk is getting processed, like she said, think how much skim milk now had to be processed because it had to get rid of all that fat. It's what classifies it? Is it under 1% or is it under 0.5% of fat?
I think it's under 0.5%.
Yeah, don't quote us on that, but it's definitely, it's you know, there's obviously a standard for what skim milk is, and it's under so low in fat. And
when it's removing the fat, it's not just removing the fat, it's removing the fat soluble vitamins too. And then this is the thing that kills me.
Oh,
is then they refortify it with vitamin D. How are you supposed to absorb it if there's no fat in it? That makes no sense.
So you need, for fat soluble vitamins, we've probably said it before, but we'll say it again. For fat soluble vitamins, which is your vitamin A, D, E, and K, you need fat to absorb them. So if you were to just take vitamin A or vitamin D found in the skim milk, there's no fat in that milk, so you're not going to absorb it. You're just going to end up pooping it out, which that's no fun.
No. Not even a little bit. Zero fun,
no.
Sir.
And
remember the Titans reference. Ooh, I just want to say atherosclerosis.
Got it. Nailed it. I read that this weekend, so I'm reading this awesome book by Dr. Colin Champ. Called Misguided Medicine. It's actually really simple, so I think if people are looking for some more information, I'd highly recommend it. He mentioned atherosclerosis, and I almost called you and was like, oh my god, I saw the word. But yeah, so skim milk is probably ends up leading to atherosclerosis. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like this whole episode I'm like, don't quote me on this, but this is what I'm gonna say. I had another point about skim milk.
You sound like we don't know what we're talking about.
I know. It's whatever. We do. We're nutrition geniuses. I'm just not a genius on the rest of life. I had another point of skim milk. It'll come to me. So like we were talking earlier, most of your grass-fed whole milk products, you won't you won't see in skim milk form. And I think that's just like correlation. Like I just put those pieces together. I don't know if there's actually a reason behind it, but you're not seeing the good quality stuff in skim milk form. You're not seeing the French drink skim milk. I'm just saying they have I think a lower rate of heart disease. I could be wrong. Where am I pulling all this information from? Anyway,
I don't know.
So, yeah. So
also, there was actually a recent study. Actually, I don't know if it was recent or not. It probably wasn't. There was a study that was done that utilized mainly farmers, and they looked at BMI. And everyone, the people with the lowest BMI were the ones that were drinking whole milk products. So if you were drinking skim milk, you were more likely to be overweight. So keep drinking that skim milk and not meet your goals. Have fun.
Right. And honestly, so then for the people who, you got rid of the skim milk, you got rid of the milk, you have the milk back, can't tolerate it. Now that we have all these milk alternatives, like soy milk, rice milk, almond milk, coconut milk. Is there anything else milk out there? Probably. Hemp milk.
Probably.
Hemp just smells disgusting. whatever. I don't like to make a blanket statement on these because everyone's different, but most of these products, think about how they're packaged. Most of them are on your shelves. Right? So they have to have some stabilizer, some chemicals in there in order for them to be shelf stable. They're not even refrigerated until you open them. And so if you look on the package, read the ingredients, chances are that they've added something to it, A, to make it taste better, because soy milk and rice milk do not taste good. So they're probably adding sugar. And then chances are they're adding B, chemicals, because they need to somehow make it stay together in a homogenized form and make it last on your shelves forever and a day. So
to make it similar, this is the other thing, is like, I think it goes back to the same argument of like, why are you making lamb flavored tofu? Why not just eat lamb? Why are you making like milk with a nutrient composition that's similar to cow's milk? You know, like, I get it for people who are lactose intolerant or have a milk protein allergy, but I just think it's kind of silly.
And then
they're adding like 6 different things. You have to add carrageenan to make sure it has a good mouthfeel, and it's just it's silly.
It is silly. I agree. And I think another great point is if you are starting to eat a real food, clean food diet, where do you need that milk anymore? You know, the standard American diet starts with, you know, milk and cereal in the morning. You have a glass of milk here and there with lunch and dinner. I just feel like when you start eating real foods, when you start eating eggs and bacon in the morning, you're not going to need that cup of milk for your cereal. You're going to need it, you know, that heavy cream for your coffee, you know, and then for lunch, you're not going to need, you know, Kraft cheese singles. You know, you're not going to need.
Oh, God. I literally have goosebumps right now. Oh,
you're like, that's not even dairy. It's not. but it just, you start thinking about it. Like, someone asked me the other day, well, I'm doing a dairy elimination. Can I use almond milk? And I'm like, what are you using it for? If you're using it as just a little dollop in your coffee and it's a good quality almond milk, or you're making it yourself, sure. But if you're drinking a glass of it, you need to rethink it. Okay. It's not doing you any good, and you're going to run into other issues, and you're replacing, you know, meat, vegetables, and fruit with this less nutrient dense thing. So,
right. And if you're looking for something because you want a flavored beverage that's not water, drink tea.
Right.
Like we talked about. And if you wonder why it's a good idea to drink tea, you should go back to last week's podcast on superfoods.
You should be a superhuman. Anyway, all right. I think we're going over our time limit here, but any concluding thoughts on dairy?
Always.
Of course.
Cows are cool. Like, I'm obsessed with cows, and they used to be the background on my computer screen because I just think that they're big and dumb and so entertaining. I love cows. Oh, also, fun fact, cows have 4 stomachs, for those of you who don't know.
They do, because they eat grass and it ferments in their stomach, which is a good thing. Sounds gross, but it's a good thing, because then they extract all the nutrients from the grass that we cannot. Okay, getting too nerdy. My concluding thoughts are, if you think that you even might have an allergy or an intolerance to dairy, give it a 30-day try. Give it 30 days without any dairy. Add it back in and see how you feel. It's not going to kill you to get rid of dairy for a month. Your bones aren't going to break. You're not going to fall apart. As long as you're eating a real food, clean food kind of diet that we preach. Preach.
Yep.
So if you do need help, if you think, you know, I don't know how to even go about this, you can find Marie and I on our websites and contact us, which Marie will give you that information. She's so much better at that than me. and we can set up consultations with you and give you that extra help you need to do it, you know, do it right. We don't want you to eliminate dairy and not eat anything. You know, we want you to eliminate dairy and still be eating a good quality and enough food to, you know, be superhuman.
Right. So if you're looking to find Laura, you can find her at thesassydietitian.com. You can find her at thesassyrd on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can find me at pearlsofnutrition.com. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Nutrition Geniuses out.